Welcome to the Financially Independent Teachers Podcast, where educators come together to discuss their journey on the road to financial independence. Now, please join our co-host, Dave and Brandon, as they prepare to help other educators get fit with their finances.
Welcome and thanks for joining us on episode number 161 of the Financially Independent Teachers Podcast. If you think your story could help other educators and you'd be willing to come on the show, please check out our webpage at financiallyindependentteachers.com and fill out the form to come on the show. Coach Spies, it is so good to see you recording again early on a Saturday. I think today's episode could be life-changing for many individuals listening to this show as we talk about what can we do to increase that pension? What if I'm a North Carolina educator and on the pay scale, it says from step 15 to step 25, I will never get another pay raise again in that decade. I know many other states might not be facing that, but I think Tiffany's story, Coach, can really create some ideas for educators to advance themselves.
Yeah, I think so too. It's not just the typical track of going to, you know, maybe administration and then, you know, maybe the central office. There's other things that you can do within the schoolhouse, I think, that that maybe we don't always think about. And then again, there's also things that you can do that are related to the schoolhouse, right? There's things that you can do. You picked up skills as a teacher or as an administrator, and then that opens up doors even outside. And so I think one of the things that our guests do is they stimulate the imagination. And so when you start thinking about what your options are and what your possibilities are. Sometimes I know as a teacher, I struggled with the idea of ever being out of the classroom. I struggled with the idea that I love teaching. And so, but you know, there's other things that I could love too. That doesn't mean I have to just stay right there. And so hopefully today's episode is going to stimulate the imagination a bit for some teachers and some possible tracks they might run. So.
Absolutely. Well, we would like to welcome Tiffany to the show. Tiffany, how are things down in Georgia?
Good. It's technically Hotlanta, and today is a beautiful spring day, so I'm super excited. This is the best time of the year for Georgia.
Mm. Oh, yeah. We've got a beautiful week coming up here in eastern North Carolina. We're looking at mid-80s this week in mid-April, so can't beat that. I know people will be out on the boats, getting in the swimming pools, and probably doing a lot of yard work. So tell us a little bit as we get started here, how long you've been in education in Georgia and what your role was in education when you got started.
I've been in education since 2005. And I started as a teacher, actually a culinary teacher at a special needs high school. And so basically I went to culinary school. I was raised by a teacher. And I actually went to school thinking I'm never going into the classroom. And I couldn't fight it. And I ended up in the classroom, but I was teaching what I absolutely loved. And that is kind of where I started. And I stayed in the classroom about 6 or 7 years before I transitioned to my current career track in school nutrition.
So as a culinary arts teacher, was there ever a struggle with fundraising and with making sure you had everything you needed for your program? So that's a little different than just being like a social studies teacher like Dave and I are. You had to worry about numbers. You had to worry about funding. You know, was that stressful or was it pretty easy at your school? Did you have the resources you needed? What was that like as a young teacher?
I don't think you ever have the resources you need in the classroom. But the beautiful thing about food is that everybody loves food. And mm-hmm. So we would do caterings. We would do, we used to do a student ran restaurant in some of my roles where people would come in. We even did a theme one time where we did like a Jamaican and we had a band come in, like a Jamaican theme restaurant. And so we were able to make money in unique ways that other people weren't. And that's pretty much how I funded my program. Because back when I first started, I think maybe they gave me right at $2,000 to do everything. And I was like, what am I going to do with $2,000? So, yeah.
Like you can't even make it out of Sam's Club with $2,000 these days with inflation.
Exactly. Exactly.
So tell us a little bit about the transition. So I'm assuming that you started back in 2005. Were you one of those teachers like Coach and I where teaching was that first job right out of college?
No, actually, I worked for the USDA as a food inspector for a very short stint, and then realized that that wasn't for me. And because, like I said, I had been raised by an educator, I always knew teaching was an option. And so I started thinking, how could I do what I really love all day long? And food was it for me. And so I started thinking about, oh, can I teach? And so I started learning that they had culinary programs in schools. And back then, culinary programs were kind of just starting. They used to be more home ec based. And so they were starting to look for people like me who came from industry, who had culinary degrees, to come in and teach kids.
Which I'll never forget being in high school. I thought taking a foods class was going to be the easiest class ever. And all we're going to do is bake cookies and have a lot of fun. And man, that first month of foods class rocked my world, like definitions and lots of studying and measurements and
food
math.
Safety.
And man, you know how that struggle is. People probably come in there thinking, oh, this is going to be cake and we're just going to eat and have a great time. But the safety and everything else, it's no joke. And again, when you're dealing with all the things that a foods teacher has to deal with, I mean, safety is imperative. So you get into the classroom, you make that switch. And as a young teacher, you end up getting married to another teacher. And I think you started out pre-recording saying you made about $33,000 that first year. Can you talk a little bit about being a young teacher, married to another young teacher, and maybe some of the struggles when you're in a marriage and you're trying to do the personal finance thing right, but maybe your partner's not really getting on board?
The biggest thing when we first started is not really knowing what to expect, because, you know, we were baby teachers and newly married and starting our lives together, and coming in with a different background and perspective. And I always kind of knew about finances because of how I was raised. And so I kind of had some goals. I had an IRA when I was younger that one of my uncles had me start, only $50 a month, but I knew it existed, right? And so I kind of knew once I got a real job what I wanted to do, that I wanted to save. I didn't necessarily know quite how to do it, but I knew that's what was important to me. But when I got married and we tried to make those changes the way that I would have thought, we didn't necessarily agree on how to go about that and what that should look like.
So what did the without trying to get too personal, one of the things that we just to give you some background, one of the things that we talk about a lot is the relationship between two married people, husband and wife married together, you know, having to have these conversations about finances. This is one of the most difficult things that people have to deal with. You know, getting on the same page is not easy. So when you guys had those conversations, what were the biggest, I guess you could say, roadblocks to getting on the same page? What were the subjects? What were the issues? What was the most difficult thing about those conversations that you just could not quite get through?
One, that you could live on less, that you didn't have to keep up with everybody else. Back then, Facebook was really big, and I can remember him coming to me one time and saying, well, why can't we go on vacation like everybody else? You know, because they were posting like their pictures. But at the time we had a new baby, we had a new house. And I was like, well, I don't mind going on vacation, but if I go on vacation, I want to pay for it cash. Mm-hmm. And so him not understanding that putting it on a credit card really wasn't an option for me. So that created a barrier because he felt like kind of like I was keeping him from life, if that makes
okay.
sense.
No, it does. And yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's- so. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. I don't want to interrupt you, but I was just thinking that that's because when you're looking at a credit card that, you know, maybe has a $10,000, $20,000 limit on it and we don't have anything on it yet, why not put $5,000 on it? The payments won't be much. It won't be that big a deal. And, you know, and so that's the mindset from the other side. But the mindset from the personal finance perspective is, oh, no, we don't go into debt. We don't pay interest, you know, to go on a vacation. We save the money and pay for it in cash and do it that way. I can see where that would be a very difficult conversation sometimes for two people that don't see it the same way. And so that is a really, so you're speaking right to the heart there of issues that happen, you know, with listeners, we're really just people in general that are trying to get their finances straight. That is a difficult topic. It's very difficult. So, Dave, what is some advice that we give, I guess, for to married couples when they're having trouble getting on the same?
Honestly, the best thing that ever happened to my wife and I when we started out, and she was very similar. Hey, I'll just put it on a credit card. We'll work a little bit harder and we'll just pay it off. And then every 6 months, we'll just keep that cycle going. It's like just like a hamster on a wheel or a cat chasing a flashlight around. So you're never going to catch it. But literally for my wife and I, it was going to Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University. When we went to FPU together, and my name's Dave as well, of course. But when the FUs started getting thrown at Dave Ramsey instead of Dave Fleischer, and she could get mad at Dave Ramsey, like we were both like on a united front that we didn't like Dave Ramsey. But we learned a lot, you know. I was a good saver. My wife was a big spender and she was a really good giver. But just learning the most basic parts of personal finance, insurance, and what investing was, and what a mutual fund was, and what a single stock was, and being on the same page. And I know Dave, a lot of his stuff now, it's online and you can, you know, purchase the program and do it from home. But what really made a difference for us was going to a local church. And then you had another group of 15 or 20 couples that were going through it, and everybody was able to have the conversations, and some were further along and some were newbies, and all of us collectively coming together and kind of cheerleading each other along really changed our lives. So premarital counseling, if you're somebody who's dating right now or you're engaged, highly suggest premarital counseling. And I would highly suggest going through Dave Ramsey's FPU before you ever get married to at least have those conversations.
Yeah, I think so too.
And I want to, you know, echo that also, because even though we didn't ever fully get on the same page, I did convince him to go to Dave Ramsey.
Okay.
And even though, like I said, it didn't change us 100%, it did draw him closer.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it wasn't just me saying it. He was hearing it from other people. We went to a local church, you know, and we went to the class each week. And so it was really meaningful. It just didn't solve all our problems. So it was definitely worth it. I tell everybody that it would have been worse had we not gone to Dave Ramsey.
And I think that, and you know, of course, you know, Dave and I do some financial coaching. Dave does much more than I do. But I definitely think a financial coach is very helpful. Having someone to follow through with you and follow up with you and help you with accountability and things like that. I liken a financial coach to a fitness trainer. Like me, I mean, I was an athlete. I mean, I played football through college. I know how to work out. I can sit down and write a workout. I'm not saying I'm as competent as a good personal trainer, but I know how to work out. But I'm going to do it better if I have a personal trainer that I meet with that develops the workout, and all I have to do is go in there and do the workout and that he or she tells me to do and puts me through it. And I have accountability and all that. I liken it to the same thing, you know, so a financial coach can really help a couple get on the same page. I think that's one of the biggest benefits a financial coach brings, is helping a married couple get on the same page. Like they can blame the other, you can blame the coach.
Exactly. Both people can. Man, some of the financial coaching I've done are hilarious, where we just all become friends and have a good time. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I feel like I'm playing Dr. Phil in the middle between spouses. Like, hey guys, you can take that trip you saved up, you know, it's fun, but you're in the classroom, you're working through this, you have a young child and you're trying to work through the financial things. And unfortunately the relationship doesn't end up working out, but I hate to say this because I don't know the person, but it's kind of addition by subtraction. All of a sudden things don't work. And now your career is taking off. Can you talk about making that transition from getting out of the classroom and where you went for the next step?
So for me, in education, it's really hard to figure out how to go up if you don't want to be a principal. And so I really was trying to figure out, well, how do I increase my income? But I know I don't want to be a principal. And so I started looking into different options. But something that I did as a teacher is I would have speakers come in and talk about possible careers for my students. And a lady came in one day from the central office who worked in school nutrition, and she was just telling my kids about her job and all these different things. And I was like, wait a minute, we have almost the same background. Like, I love food. You know, I was like, I can do that. And that literally is what changed my life and my pathway. I pulled her to the side and asked her kind of how she got into that and what she had to do, what the requirements were. In the state of Georgia, we're one of the only states that require school nutrition directors to be a certified school nutrition director. So it does require you going back to school and getting a certification. But once I figured that out, I started looking to the options and started going back to school and studying so that I can make that transition into that field.
What was the salary looking like as you exited the classroom? I know you started at the 33. Do you think you were over like maybe around the 45 mark or so?
I made about 55. And part of that was also because I was the FCCLA person. So back then, I think they gave me, it was like a certain percentage of my salary that they paid me to do FCCLA. And so with my salary plus that, that was how I was able to get to a really decent salary, actually, for what I thought back then, what I thought sure. was reasonable.
So as you're starting to make more money, what are some moves that you're making in terms of, maybe real estate investments, budgeting? What are some moves that you're making as you're increasing your salary there?
So I haven't bought another house. I only have my one single family, but that is actually one of my goals, to have a second home eventually. That's kind of what I'm working on right now, because there's some areas in Atlanta that are growing because we have something called the Atlanta Beltline.
Oh yeah.
And so real estate is really, really popping right now. But something that I looked at, I was really strategic at looking at possibly moving districts.
Mm-hmm.
So after I was able to transition to school nutrition, I started really paying attention to which districts paid more. And so because I had not worked in school nutrition, I had to cross the barrier of, no experience in that particular role. So I was like, how do I get experience? What I actually did was I called around to some school nutrition directors and asked them, could they just talk with me, like more like informational interviews. I sent probably 25 emails. Three people responded.
Mm-hmm.
One was from a district in Athens, Georgia. And she let me, because we had different work calendars, she let me come work with her over my spring break, but she was in school. So I would work in the school during the daytime. And then at the end of my work day, of her work day, I would go and sit with her, and she would show me like the budgets, how to manage USDA, like all the things related to school nutrition. And even though I couldn't get full-time experience, that was how I actually got my first interviews, because I was able to share my story on how I'm learning about the field. So between that and then now being willing to go in, I was actually willing to go in and take a pay cut and kind of start over. They have something called a manager in training program in most school districts. Because I had culinary experience, I would have been perfect for that. So that's actually what I applied for. But when they interviewed me and realized that I had, by that time, I had a master's degree, I had worked with the young lady in the other district, I had a lot of background knowledge, I actually got the role I really wanted, which was an area supervisor for a large district in Georgia. And that was kind of like the first transition. So it was like so many blessings being poured on me, because I was like, oh my goodness, this is exactly what I was really going for.
Yeah, I think we've
got
to be.
So that was the first transition. Go ahead.
We've got to be proactive. It comes back to that old saying, Coach, we've talked about, that there's three types of people: those who make things happen, those who watch things happen, and those who say, man, what the heck just happened? Tiffany was out there making it happen. Like, you might have to, again, you're going to have to go through some struggles. You might have to, send 100 emails. I tell my students all the time, fill out 100 scholarship applications. You might only get three or four, but if you only filled out three or four, the chances of you getting any are very difficult. So sometimes you got to put yourself out there. Sometimes you've got to be willing to potentially get out of your comfort zone. Maybe you have a longer drive to work. Is it worth driving an extra, 30 miles each way to work every day if you're going to get a $20,000 raise per year or maybe more? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. As Tiffany said, maybe you just get your foot in the door and then you can work your way back closer to where your home base is, but you've got to get going. What did that raise end up looking like, Tiffany? Going from like 55,000, doing all the extras to get that 55. Now you transition into this job. How much more were you making and how did you handle that?
So the first real job actually wasn't a big raise. It was like maybe 2 or 3,000. But what was valuable about that position was now I'm getting that true experience. And because I was in a large district with a big reputation, I stayed there probably about 2 years. And then I used the research I had done into what other districts I could go to. And I actually moved to another district where I got a title bump. Because I don't know, sometimes it's like if you've never been an AP, you've never been a principal. So my new title was assistant director. And so that was a lateral pay. And I stayed there about 2 years. And then I got the bump that really made the difference. My next role was a nutrition coordinator for another large district back in Metro, because I actually did, like you said, have to go 2 hours out to get the title bump. And then I came back in, I got a $30,000 raise in 1 week. And it was game changing.
Oh yeah, you celebrated that night when
Oh, yeah.
when you got that phone call or that or whatever. That was a celebratory night, I'm sure. $30,000
Correct.
bump. That is awesome. That is awesome. Okay, so then I was actually ahead of myself. Then now would be the question. So you've given that background to help us know that where how you got there. Okay, so now that you got there and you got the $30,000 bump, now I think the question probably works better, and that is of okay, I'm making $30,000 a year more. What does that do to my budget? What does that do to my goals when it comes to investing, real estate? I mean, that is a game changer. That's a lot of money, you know. So now what? What was the plan from there?
So then I started. So before then, I had been deferring my student loan debt. And so that was a big like monkey on my back. Didn't know how I was going to get out because I had went to school all those different times, right? And so that was the first thing I did. I started paying off my student loans and started making regular payments, because before the deferment was causing the loans to grow and grow and grow. And so I tell my story on my podcast about how I had $198,000 in student loans. And so that was the first priority. And then also putting my daughter in a school program, that was a big part of where our money went. We actually put her in private school. And that's because my daughter has a learning disability. And one of the things that I wasn't getting was the support I needed. And so I was trying to figure out, well, how do I manage that? And so that pay bump really helped us do that. And then we also were able to both start saving in our 403Bs. And so that was important as well.
That's awesome. So you were, and to me, those are investment dollars. You're investing in your child. You know, right now I'm going back to school. My investment dollars are sort of investing in myself. I'm paying for my school. You know, investments come in all different ways. We take our investment dollars and we do different things with it. So you bumped up your 403B. You said, so your 403B is through your employer
Correct.
And so that became even more important because that's a tax advantage for you.
Correct.
I'm sure that maybe came into play as far as what you decided to invest in, the vehicle that you decided to use.
Correct. And so in Georgia, we get 403Bs, 457s. And so that is the way. And back then, I was only doing 403B because I didn't fully understand the 457. I just knew I should do a 403B, right? And so that was kind of what we were doing. And then from that job, because I wasn't a director yet, remember, I was one of like many leaders. And so the next move I made was to become a director. And so that increased my income again. And then that is when we started doing more. We both started investing more. We also, because we did have debt, because we were not on the same page, and we started paying off our debt. We started doing things that we always wanted to do that we weren't able to do before.
Right.
I was going to ask that question next of, the lifestyle creep. You know, as you get a raise and as you start paying off the debt, what did you guys do to kind of reward yourself, or did you see that lifestyle inflation start to happen, and how did you work through that?
I would say the house would probably be the biggest lifestyle inflation. The next house we bought, I actually had like woke up in the middle of the night in like night sweats because I had never signed a loan for that much money. And I was like, are we sure we want to do this? I think that was probably the biggest lifestyle creep because we live, we moved to, a really nice neighborhood. It was like we can afford things. I'll tell people this is the difference. our very first house, it was cookie cutter, right? Like everything was kind of standard. You went in, they said choose like three cabinet colors. That was it. This house, you walked in, they were like, you can have any cabinets, any granite countertops. You were like, you know, tile backsplash, choose your color. All of those things were included. So that would show you the difference in the level of house that we bought. That makes it.
The lifestyle creep questions are always funny to me. I saw a meme on Facebook not too long ago, and it said, if I won the lottery, my life wouldn't change much, but there would be signs, and it had a sandwich and like 25 pieces of bologna on it. there would be signs that I just won the lottery.
Correct.
But you know, the lifestyle creep thing is really, that's a thing. You know, people struggle with that. They get the raises, they, you know, maybe you get the, you know, you get the promotion, and all that ends up happening is you're in the same boat that you're in, because you just end up spending more money on, you know, because you don't have those right habits. But it sounds like you already had the right ideas coming from the family, coming from the family that you came from. And so you already had kind of the right ideas of what you wanted to do. So lifestyle creep wasn't something that probably got you, because immediately your eyes turned to, okay, I've got to get this debt paid off. I've got to, you're thinking about your future. And, but for some people that doesn't come natural. That's not intuitive for most, I think. And so they get that extra $30,000, and that just means they're going to spend $30,000 more. And, you know, so that's wonderful that you had that background to know what to do.
But that does go into the marriage thing, though, because even though that was my focus, and I was the one. So, you know, often in marriages, you have the one that manages the money and one that doesn't. Right. And so I was the one kind of managing the budget. So that was easier for me to implement on my side. But then on the flip side, you have your other partner who wants other things, like a new car, you know, like those kinds of things. So there was a point where he really wanted a new car. And so in marriage, you know, it's give and take. And sometimes you can't just always be like, no, it's hard to fight that battle. And so he did get a new car during that period, which, you know, was a period that I wouldn't have maybe thought that was the right thing to do. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that creates, you know, tension, you know, so going back to just having the right partner. For sure.
Right.
Yeah, I think that might be the biggest decision we make.
I got the timeline wrong. I thought that at this point you guys had already separated. So by the time you got the big promotion, you and your husband were still together.
We were still together.
Okay.
We separated during COVID.
Okay. So you got the big promotion, but at the same time, you were still in a marriage where you guys weren't on the same page financially. And
correct.
So it wasn't, you weren't able to reap the full benefit of that yet because of that.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
As we fast forward to like the present day, you know, you've obviously advanced yourself. Your salary is, you know, four times higher or so than it was when you first started teaching. Are you remarried now, or are you doing the single life?
I'm doing the single life and loving it.
Okay. Doing the single life and loving it. So now that, you know, you are single, you're not having to, you know, I think it's easy for people to say, you know, hey, you know, if I just have, you know, if I get married and I have that second income or whatever, you know, we'll be killing it. But now you had a whole other set of issues, right? Where you're dealing with another person, people have different spending habits and stuff. You're back to the single life, but you're making a lot more money. What are you doing and what conscious decisions are you doing? You talked about the 457. You talked about the 403B. Does the Roth IRA play a role? If you don't mind kind of getting into the nuts and bolts of how much do you sock away for the future with the different buckets available to us?
Yeah. So when we got a divorce, and let's say we separated going forward, I can't remember the divorce. It's been a couple of years now, but that allowed me to be the one to decide, right? Without having to compromise. So then I did the 403B. I did a 457 because now I have learned about financial independence. And I started trying to figure out, okay, well, what does it look like if I retire early or change my path or, you know, don't work in Georgia, they want you to work till 60. And I already have almost 20 years and I'm not close to 60 yet. And so it's like, what does that look like? And so I'm doing the 403B, the 457. I do put money into a Roth as well. And then I also save into a 529 because I have a high schooler. And so the goal, because I've had such a bad experience with student loan debt, is I don't want her to have any student loan debt. And so that is what I'm planning. So collectively, between all the things that I have, and then we also have TRS in Georgia, they take out 6%. So collectively, I'm at about 30% investment-wise.
You're speaking my language. She knows the percentage that she's investing. I love percentages. I don't know if you've ever listened to any of the other episodes, but I get made fun of sometimes because, you know, people that are in the FI movement, they'll come in, they'll be like, well, you know, I'm going scorched earth. And I'm like, yeah, but what's the percentage? And like, what do you mean? What percentage? I just throw as much money as I can at it. You know? And I'm like, yeah, I got to know the percentage. I don't know. What are we talking here? 30% is wonderful. Right. I had a friend of mine who works in the school system, and he messaged me the other day. In fact, it was over spring break, I think. And he said, what is the correct amount to be investing? He was reworking his budget. And I said, well, you know, typically they say 15% of your income, you know, savings and investing, you know. And he said, well, I'm at 11%. And I said, well, but consider you've got a pension too. So you're doing 11% and you've got your pension, which is a superpower for educators that have it. And so, so that's just to kind of put it in perspective. So you doing 30% is a lot. That is twice the amount that we normally think of in just your average run of the mill budget. That's twice as much. So you're really killing it as far as that goes, I think.
Yes. And my goal is, how
does that Georgia thing work? I'm sorry, Tiffany. I was going to say, how does that Georgia thing work? I'm sorry.
How does the
Georgia thing work? Pension, yeah. What age can you start drawing? Is it 60? Do you have to wait till 60 to draw? Or?
So if you wait till 60 to draw, you get your full pension, no penalties. Every year you take it before 60, you lose 7% of what your pension would be. Ooh. And so my plan, because I will get to where I want to be before I'm 60, is to leave but not draw until I'm 60.
Oh, yeah, right.
So because I won't necessarily need that money because I'll have my 457.
That's right.
You know, my expenses will be low. And so that is my long-term plan to cover my own gap. And then I'm also super interested in finances. So I was telling Dave that I went back to school to be a financial planner. So that's something that I'm trying to do, is help other teachers learn about this and fully understand about investing. And so that is how I plan to create my gap.
Yeah, you'll definitely be able to do that. Dave loves the 457 for that reason. It bridges you to, you know, retirement, to where you can get to your pension. And so we put the 457 pretty high up on the order of operations of buckets that you need to be trying to fill up if you can. But so that's wonderful. And you've already got another possible career. So personal finances become a passion of yours, for sure.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Correct. Right now, I actually, like I do a podcast, but I also do some free coaching,
mm-hmm.
You know, because I have people that walk up to me all the time and say, can you help me? Can you help me budget? Can you help me get on track? Can you do this? Because, you know, I always talk about this stuff, you know, a little bit too much, but they know it. And so they come to me for advice. And so I was like, I might as well do this. This makes sense.
Dave and I get that all the time. Like, you know, so the book that we wrote, we've gotten it sponsored and it's been placed in schools. And so like my school was sponsored, so all the teachers in my school got it. And every now and then I'll have someone come up to me and say, hey, can I ask you a question real quick? And you know, and I'm always like, well, I'm not an expert, but I can, if I can't give you the answer, I can tell you where to go to find it for sure. You know? And so we get that a lot too. And it's fun to help people when it comes
absolutely.
To I love it.
We're all doing free coaching all the time. I mean, I can't tell you how many people come up to me. I just had a former student of mine text me yesterday during school, during lunch. And he was like, hey, coach, we get a 12% supplement bonus in our county. Do you know if that's based on just our base salary, or does that include our coaching stipends? And he's an athletic director. I said, man, that is a really good question. I don't know if I've ever thought of that. I asked around, a couple people didn't know. So then I just called the central office and found out, unfortunately, our 12% supplement's only based on the state salary scale. It's not based on all the extras you do. But I learned something new, then I was able to share that answer. He's like, man, I've got like 8 people at my school telling me different things. And it's so fun when we get teachers on fire about this stuff, because it is spreading. I really feel like it's a movement, and there are so many people getting helped by this.
Absolutely. And I have a goddaughter. She's in school to be a teacher right now at Kennesaw State. And she called me last night. And one of her concerns was she said she didn't want to be broke. So that was her hesitation with being a teacher. And she was considering changing her major. But I said, you don't have to be broke. I said, I have a plan for you. As long as you do the things I tell you to do, you'll be good and you can still do exactly what you want to do and love teaching. So
I
it was
love that
pretty
you put
cool.
it that way. As long as you do what I tell you to do.
A plan for you.
I have a plan for, I have a student right now. I'm an assistant principal at the school that I'm at, but I was a teacher at this school for 2 years before I became an assistant principal. And so I have a student that's a senior this year, and so he's ready to graduate, and he's got a definite plan for what he wants to do. Like he doesn't know how to get there, but he knows what he wants, you know. And I said, all right, so he wants to go into the military. And I said, okay, you're gonna get that high school diploma, you're gonna go through basic, you're gonna go into the military. I said, and then you are going to email me, and we're gonna set up a Zoom call before you get your first paycheck. And we are going to put a plan in place that's going to get you there. And you're going to do exactly what I tell you to do. And I said, if you do
Exactly.
exactly what I tell you to do, I can promise you are going to be really well off. Things are going to go well. It's going to take some sacrifices, but you're going to get there. And it's really fun when you can just look at somebody and say, do what I tell you to do. Don't do what I did.
Yes.
Do what I'm telling you to do now. I've
It's like
learned.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And she's so young, she's willing to listen to me now. So that's, it's pretty
That's right.
cool.
How
That's
much
awesome.
easier is it? Like, I'm not a good cook or chef like Tiffany probably is, but I don't mind doing the work. Half the battle is just trying to think of what am I going to cook? Like, what ingredients do I need? Even if I had someone that didn't cook for me, but if they laid out, here's your meal for Monday, Tuesday, this is all the stuff you need, kind of like, I guess, HelloFresh, it makes it super easy if you just have somebody giving you that roadmap. But so many Americans have no clue where to start. But if we could just hold somebody's hand, provide that roadmap for them, I think a lot of people could be successful. So let's talk about the hypotheticals really quick, as we're in the last handful of minutes here. If, and again, I don't think I'll ever leave the classroom. Brandon is advancing himself the way that you are, Tiffany. He's an AP. I know he has maybe aspirations down the road to be a head principal, and who knows, maybe a superintendent. And you've obviously advanced yourself. I'm just that classroom guy. That's what makes me happy. I enjoy the classroom. I'm in a situation financially where, my wife does well, so I don't feel like I need to take on any extra added stress. But if you would have stayed in the classroom and just been a classroom teacher like me, what would your yearly pension have likely looked like? But now that you've made this big bump, not only are you making tens of thousands more, but this is going to impact your entire future until you pass away with an increased pension in Georgia. What are those differences looking like?
I estimate that around now I might be making about 70, 75K if I had to stay in the classroom. That's my rough estimate because I haven't looked that great. And my pension from that, based off when I'm thinking I would leave, would be about $3,700 is what I would think, give or take.
So about 3,700 a month would
Yes.
be the pension. Gotcha.
And if I'm doing the math on set.
I know.
That's
I can
about
see you doing the math.
44,000, 44, 45,000 a year if she was
Yeah.
teaching.
And what my current salary is, my pension will be $6,800 a month.
Wow. That is
Wow.
a what a
And
huge difference that is.
huge difference. And I also want to say to people, because I tell people to be really strategic about, where they choose. Like I said, looking at the districts, part of the reason it jumps up that high is not just because I've been in education a long time, but it's also because I was strategic about choosing the district. Eventually, I ended up where I am now. I'm in the highest paying district in the state of Georgia because
And that
I'm
was not
in
by accident.
metro, not by
That surely
accident.
helps.
It was a purposeful move. Because as I started getting older and realizing my daughter's going to college, it was even purposeful for that. Me being able to help her financially as she goes to school and come out debt free. And so those are the things that I said, okay, so I need to make some moves, especially after the divorce. So something, like you said, when you go into a single income home, it's different. So in my brain, I almost was thinking, well, how could I make up the difference for a whole salary, right? And I don't necessarily make his whole salary, but I make a whole person's salary difference. And that is huge.
Absolutely. We talk about, you know, so I'm remarried now, but I also went through a separation and divorce, and it is very difficult during that time period where I was a single teacher. I was actually, I mean, you know, I was paying off debt. I was doing it. You know, I actually got debt free at that during that point, but it was very difficult on a teacher's pay to do that, because, you know, when you lose that whole salary and then you have to recalibrate and figure, okay, how I did it. And I did that and I didn't have a child. So, you know, that is a, you know, so it we talk about teachers being middle income earners and they are, but, when you're married, it makes it a whole lot easier than if you're just single. And, you know, we always have single teachers that'll talk to us about that, how the difficulty, and some of them are really making it and doing it, you know, they're doing side hustles, they're figuring it out. But it's tough though. But what you did was you found a way to basically double, well, really more than double your salary. You basically said, okay, well, I'm going to find a way to make enough money to where I make up for two people. And
correct, that was kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah, and what's encouraging about your story is that you did it without getting away from what you love to do. You still get to do something.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I tell people all the time, my job. If I hadn't known my role existed when I first came out, I might have come this route first, because I get to teach, because I do a lot of training. That's kind of like really my passion. My boss knows it's my passion. They just kind of let me do things. I get to be creative in that way, like I was in the classroom. So that's one thing. I get to talk about food all day, like, yeah, in different ways, whether it's a menu, we have some taste tests going on, food trucks, all kinds of things. And then I really like to talk about money. So believe it or not, school nutrition is a business entity within a school district. And so I typically manage $1 million budgets in my role. And so I get to combine all the things that I really love every day. And so it has really been a great move for me.
That's wonderful. That's a great story.
That's great. And I just wanted to tag in here one last thing. You had mentioned what your estimated pension will be with the new role, which is about $82,000 a year. In Georgia, will you also have Social Security on top of that, kind of as the icing on the cake?
So let me start from, every school district doesn't pay into Social Security, but because I have changed districts, I have Social Security built up in different areas. And so I will get a partial Social Security because I have the windfall that will affect me. So I'll get a portion of it because they'll penalize me because I get a pension, but I will get something. Like I tell people, I don't even count Social Security. I consider that like fun money if I get it, you know, because I'm also like, is it going to be there when I get older? I'm a little hesitant.
That whole windfall elimination provision is just terrible. Hopefully they can make some adjustments. I know a lot of teachers out there have worked jobs where they paid into Social Security, but now they're in a state that doesn't as yep. a teacher, and they're not going to get anything, or they're going to get very little compared to what they should have got. So if we have teachers listening to this show that want to learn more about you, and you mentioned you have a podcast, can you share where they can find you, maybe on social media and the name of your show?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram at Wealthy Educator Coach. And then I have a website, wealthyeducator.com.
Well, Tiffany, we greatly appreciate you sharing that story of climbing all the way from the ranks of being a teacher and dealing with all the stuff that goes on as somebody who's in the culinary arts, like Coach said, with lack of resources, and then making your way all the way into basically an administrative position. And it was really a fun story to listen to. Coach, is there anything else to add as we wrap up here?
I would love to hear, just as a wrap up, any parting advice that you might leave with the listeners, just anything that really sticks out to you to be important principles to live by, things that can help teachers get on the right track.
I would say stay out of debt, because mm-hmm. it's game changing. Be strategic about how you plan your career, even as a teacher, because it is not as cut and dry as you might have thought. There are so many opportunities in a district. Even in the classroom, there are unique things that you can do. And so just really research what that looks like, what your passion is. And then I would say know your enough, because I think why people, you know, have lifestyle creep and different things like that, it's because they haven't determined what their enough is for themselves. Mm. And they're letting other things influence them. But once you kind of know this is where I'm happy, this is my spot, then you don't go further. Like, you don't get in debt. You're not chasing somebody else's version of what you think happy is. And so I think that is probably something I would like people to really think about.
That should be a book title. Know Your Enough. Is it already a book title? I don't know. I don't think so.
No, I don't know, but I'm going to look it up.
I think that's a Tiffany Lawrence original right there. I love it. Know Your Enough. That sounds like a book. I love that advice. You know, trying to figure out, you know, where am I actually happy? You know, there's a certain point where extra doesn't make you any happier. I mean, you know, who am I? You know, what do I enjoy? What do I love? You know, and I love that advice. Tiffany, you had a wonderful story. I love this episode. This is going to be great. And I really appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk to us.
Oh, thank you guys so much for responding to my, your survey when I filled it out. I was like, they're not going to call me. So I'm so excited. And I listen to you guys all the time. I started in order. So when I found you, I'm like, I like to work from the beginning so I can learn all about you, whatever. So it's really great. So I appreciate you.
Well, we Thank appreciate you, so you, Tiffany, and Coach. Obviously, we appreciate having you on the show. And of course, we appreciate the Fit family and all the listeners who joined us on this week's version of the Fit Educator Podcast. We hope you join us for next week. And as always, be frugal, be fearless, and be a lifelong learner. Take care, everybody.